As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat. And if you heard the train whistles or engines rolling down the tracks, that would be the Joe Milton hype train that's left the station. I am, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Austin Meek. After Austin, I gotta say, that was impressive. I don't know how else to put it. I usually start these seasons by saying, everybody just calm down and sit back in your seat. But you know what? After the 2020 everyone's had, and the effort Michigan put forth in a 49-24 win, especially offensively, I don't know how else to say it. That was very, very impressive from not only Joe Milton, but everybody on offense that Michigan put out there.
We've all earned this, haven't we?
Yeah,
10 months, it's been rough on everybody. So the chance just to sit back a little bit and feel good about things, I think everybody's entitled to do that. So I'm with you. I'm not gonna be here today telling anybody to temper your expectations or trying to point out the flaws or anything, because hey, it took a long time for Michigan football to finally be here. For a couple hours Saturday night, people got to turn on that game, watch a quarterback who looks like he could be the real deal, go out there and lead Michigan to a road victory against a pretty good team, and they looked pretty good doing it. Just not a lot to nitpick about that performance at all. About as emphatic an opening statement as you could make for Jim Harbaugh's team.
Yeah, and I think we'll start with Milton here because he was the main event and the guy we all sort of were wondering about, and we talked so many times on this show about whether or not we believed that Michigan was trying to talk itself into thinking Milton was ready or whether or not it was real. And like you said, there's just not a lot to nitpick here. I mean, for a day one start, never done this before, in a pandemic year with limited all this stuff. Maybe, maybe in some ways the ability to focus just on what's in front of them, helped Michigan a lot. But I mean, Joe Milton's confidence in the pocket, his feet were calm. If Minnesota gave him the middle of the field, he attacked it. He was, comfortable with his reads. When they needed to get out of something, they got into the right stuff. He may have, if Gattis, I'm sure, and I know, we know Josh Gattis now for a little more than a year, and we know he'll find things that, he thinks Milton maybe can improve on, I'm sure, and obviously there's going to be room for him to improve, and he's got to do it again, but he brought a level of comfortability and confidence to all areas of the field, and you could see it from every player on the team. I mean, like Harbaugh today, earlier today, Austin says that, Ben Mason got up in the locker room and said, gave a little speech before the game about, Joe, this is your night and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that, it goes well for you. And, that's one guy making a speech, but from what we watched on the field, it sounds like every single player on that sideline who had, an offensive assignment basically would have echoed the same exact thing. It felt like everybody was all in for one thing together completely. No selfish anything, and everybody executed. I don't know how else to put it. That was the most impressive offensive debut that Michigan's had under Jim Harbaugh. And for a first-time starting quarterback, that's probably the most impressive one that Michigan's had. I mean, since probably Denard, I would think. You know, off the top of my head, I tried to search through it. And, you know, Big Ten opponent on the road at night, there's just not a lot to nitpick. He was outstanding.
If you didn't watch the game, if you just looked at the numbers, you might say, well, what's all this talk about Joe Milton? You know, 15 mm-hmm. for 22, 225 yards, a touchdown, 52 yards on the ground. If you actually watched the game, though, I think the things that you saw with Joe Milton go so far beyond just the numbers that he put up, and you hit on it. It's the just how cool and collected he looked in the pocket, the command that he had of the offense, how smooth he was in the running game. I mean, you watched him when he got going north and south at 6'5 and 240 pounds. Yeah. There's not a lot of teams that are going to be able to bring him down, you know, before he gets 4 or 5 yards. I mean, that is a huge element of Michigan's offense that we didn't see last year with Shea Patterson, and it opens up so much. And it just, you didn't, the way I put it in my story, you know, he didn't necessarily have any huge flashy plays, you know, highlights that you're going to watch over and over again. But there was enough there to say, those plays are coming with Joe Milton, which we expected that. You know, we knew that he could do that. We knew he could throw the ball a mile. The question was, is he going to have the command of the offense? And to me, that was answered. I mean, he was so much smoother and so much more in control than I expected, that all the other stuff now, I think, you know, that's going to come. He's going to make the huge highlight plays. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to hit some downfield shots. There are a couple plays, you know, if Eric All catches a ball, if Ronnie Bell doesn't stumble, you know, the stats could have looked, you know, even better than they did. But to me, all that is secondary. What stood out was just, you know, the poise that he showed and the way that he commanded that offense.
Yeah, and I think I would also note on top of all that, that, you know, with that poise and everything else, the one thing I sort of, you know, wondered about, you know, you mentioned it also, the big play, the big arm, all the talent that we know he has. And I wondered, you know, is he going to, you know, sometimes with these guys that have these huge arms, like sometimes they trust their arm like even too much to a point, right, where they try to fit something where it probably just shouldn't go because they think they can get it there, you know, and all those types of things. But I will say this, Minnesota didn't do a lot to make, you know, Milton have to, you know, back off on certain reads or check away or really scan a lot of stuff. He didn't, you know, they didn't make him change it up too much when he was dropped back, and he didn't drop back a ton. It was only 22 times. But I thought Gaddis did a terrific, and I mean, like, I'll stress that again, terrific job of keeping Joe Milton in situations where he was going to have clean reads. They were going to be pretty easy, you know, pretty self-explanatory. It was like, this is not, we're not going to make you be in a situation where you feel like you have to improv, you know? And I think that by taking a lot of that off of his shoulders and saying, if you just, you know, and I'm sure this is what they've drilled over the last several weeks and months, if you just stick with what we're teaching you to do here and understand the concept of what we're trying to run, then this is going to become really clear for you, and you're not going to have to go off schedule, and you're not going to have to force things. You're not going to have to bail out of a pocket because it's, you know, that maybe you get skittish on or whatever. That all combined with, I think, Milton's kind of natural ability to be calm anyway, really seems to just unlock all of this in a game like that. I mean, Minnesota, Michigan's got better talent, I think, than Minnesota. I think we all can probably agree with that, especially at the line of scrimmage. I mean, that game was probably over the minute Ben Mason, Jalen Mayfield, and Stuber just completely collapsed the whole right side of their line on that 70-yard touchdown run. But Gaddis's game plan and just the ability to sort of keep Milton right where you want him, to where he's taken enough chances that you're okay with, but he's not getting greedy. He's not doing anything that's totally off script, and he's making the right reads and just getting you in and out of stuff, and the ball keeps moving. I mean, that was Gaddis and Harbaugh. They could not have asked, I don't think, for a better start to a year from a guy given all these circumstances. I don't know how much more confidence Joe Milton needed. I don't think he did need much, because I think he was already pretty confident, but he's got all he can handle now, because that was, I don't know. I don't know what else to say other than a completely impressive effort all the way across the board. And I think it's safe to say, Austin, that, you know, Gaddis possibly here has found kind of the missing piece that really ties everything they want to do together in, you know, in possibly Joe Milton.
I'm going to hit you with some stats here because I'm working on this for a story for tomorrow. So we've talked a ton about explosive plays and the need for Michigan's offense to generate more explosive plays. And I think that was the big thing that they needed to accomplish in the offseason was make this a more explosive offense. So Michigan did not have a single run of more than 50 yards last year. They had two of them in the first game, 70 yards for Zach Charbonnet, 66 for Hassan Haskins. So they're already, that explosiveness they're looking for in the running game showed up. Michigan had seven plays of 20 yards or longer. That was the most of any Big Ten team in the opening weekend. So we're seeing it already. You know, we're seeing the potential for this offense to be able to make those plays and, you know, gain yards in chunks. And that was, you know, we saw that at times last year, but we didn't see it consistently enough. And to me, it's, you know, it's impressive that they did that in an opening game against a good team, you know, and it just, you know, it all looked easy. You know, they've just made it look easy. And you've watched way more Michigan football than I have, but when was the last time we said that Michigan made things look easy on offense?
Denard Robinson. That's it. I mean, that's the last time. I mean, if Devin Gardner had a couple moments at the end of the 2012 season that, you know, had people excited. But really, from a true functioning, you know, the whole deal, I don't know. I mean, like, Harbaugh had some moments at the end of, you know, the year with Rudock when it finally started to click. They had some nice days with Shea Patterson during that 10-game win streak, but nothing like this. I mean, I think that the presence of a quarterback that's that big, you know, 6'5", 240, whatever, and Milton's not running any 40-yard dashes that are going to knock people, you know, off their feet, but it's just, I mean, he's plenty fast enough. He can absorb contact. You don't have to run him, you know, 20 times a game. You only have to do it like 4 or 5, but I mean, the fact that everyone knows that they have those design runs in there, he can make, you know, run reads and all this sort of thing. They're just 9 guys catching 15 passes. They have so many guys who can do everything that they want to do. That's, I think, my biggest takeaway is that Haskins, Charbonnet, Corum, Evans are 4 running backs who all 4 of them can do any single thing that you want to call. So if you put any of them on the field, it's not a tell. It's all, you know, positional diversity and all that sort of thing. And you go to the receivers and it's the same thing. Ronnie Bell, Roman Wilson, Jackson, Sainristil, Henning, all these guys they put in, none of these guys signal like, oh, so-and-so's in the game, they're doing this. Or, so you know, such-and-such is in the game, they're going to do that. All of them can do everything. And I think that it was an underrated thing that we sort of talked about a little bit, you know, this summer, that you don't have Donovan Peoples-Jones anymore, who was a terrific athlete, and you don't have Nico anymore, who obviously was an amazing downfield, you know, receiver. But those guys were not recruited to play in this offense. This offense operates better when you have guys like these quick twitch, you know, backs and receivers who can sort of line up in all different areas and do all different things. And when you have a quarterback who you have to pay attention to what he's doing, you know, in the ground game, they become suddenly an incredibly difficult team to prepare for and plan for. And all the stuff that we've talked about for a year, you got to find a way to get enough bullets in your pocket to where if you have to go into a shootout, you're going to have enough in there. And not that this was a shootout, Austin, but Minnesota started moving the ball and they started, you know, coming up with answers in the second half. And none of it mattered because Michigan had more every time they got the ball back. That's football in 2020. That's college football in today's game. We talked about it a ton last year, early on in the season, about how there are so many teams in so many areas of the country that have offenses that always find answers. And Michigan just hasn't been able to do that until Saturday. And, you know, we'll see if it can continue over these next 7 games, COVID's uncertainty, all these other things. But that's a pretty significant thing. And I think for Michigan, it really changes, possibly, you know, the outlook for their season and, you know, their future kind of long term here. I mean, Milton's not a senior. So, you know, this is a different deal now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Think about the big storylines of the preseason, the things we heard about Michigan in the preseason. It was the running back group, a deep running back group, a more explosive running back group. It was the offensive line potentially being more athletic and being able to replace those four starters without missing a beat. It was the receivers being interchangeable, deep, fast, explosive in space. It was the defensive line being improved. It was Michael Barrett being a difference maker at Viper. It was Vince Gray and Jamon Green being able to hold down the cornerback spots. All of those things we talked about in the preseason. And look, we know that when you hear that stuff and you haven't seen it, you have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. And I think if you'd asked me before the game, I would have said, you know, if about half of that stuff pans out, I'd probably feel pretty good. I have to say, you know, pretty much everything that we talked about as the potential of what Michigan could be, you know, we saw glimpses of it. We saw things to back it up. You know, maybe they're not a finished product in some areas. Maybe there's aspects of it that still need to continue to develop. But really, all of the things we heard about in the preseason, we saw something to substantiate it. Obviously, starting with number one, Joe Milton, and everything we heard about Joe.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it really did. I mean, it was, every time they would say we're excited about this guy or that guy, it just went back into the, well, you've said that 1,000 times about 1,000 different guys. But I mean, across the board, I mean, it's like, you know, all the guys that were sort of question marks of whether or not, you know, is this guy going to step up and finally do something when it's his time, like Mike Barrett, like you mentioned. You know, Harbaugh today mentioned that Mike Barrett was the first player since Jabril Peppers to have the defensive player of the week and special teams player of the week in-house there. So that's impressive. It's across the board. I mean, and the offensive line, I guess, is probably the other one that was the big sort of circle in the middle, right? Where it was like, you know that, you know, if Mayfield's back, you know that that's going to be fine. Ryan Hayes has played before and, you know, still has to develop and still has some things that he has to work on. But for the most part, you trusted that, you know, he was probably going to be ready. But Vastardis, Stuber, and, you know, Chuck Filiaga, namely Vastardis and Filiaga, were the two big question marks offensively. And it was just kind of like, you know, well, if they don't have to be dominant, but if they can just sort of hang in there and give them what they want, then they're going to be just fine. And, you know, Stuber at times on the ground was dominant. Vastardis was solid. Filiaga was solid. And then, you know, Ben Mason was, I mean, I think I like forgot about Ben Mason, and then suddenly he's back in there as an H-back slash fullback, whatever you want to call him, and it was a perfect fit for him. It worked out in some ways kind of by happenstance and chance. You know, Gattis came here and Michigan already had some of these guys on the roster, and I was never sure what they were going to do with them, like Giles Jackson, Sanders Stills, some of these other guys, and they've since recruited more of them. But the roster fits what Josh Gattis wants to do so well, and we could see it at the end of last year at times. And I don't want to make this into like a dinging thing on Shea Patterson, but Shea Patterson is 6 foot, 200 pounds. He's not 6'5", 240. He was never going to give you the run, you know, the run layer that you really need to make this thing really dynamic. And now you have that, and it really just, it raises all boats. Even if you have a mistake here and there, everything doesn't have to be perfect. The way they scheme things up in space, it all comes down to one-on-ones. If you can just get some of these athletes in a one-on-one matchup, like the first play of the game, the fake to Charbonnet on the zone play, and then they come back to Blake Corum in the flat, and all they're asking him to do is beat one linebacker, and it's a 20-something yard game. And he beats the linebacker, and it's a 18, 24-yard game, whatever it was. That's it. It's really that simple sometimes. And, you know, Michigan right now anyway, it looks like they have all the right guys in the right seats, all pointed forward. And offensively, for a lot of fans out there, I know that this was a long time coming. People had gotten exhausted with this start and stop stuff, with the, You know, when is a quarterback finally going to look like he's ready to play football? And when is everybody around him going to be ready to go? And, you know, that's as smooth an early season game as I've seen from Harbaugh here, probably number one on the list. And, you know, as smooth as probably I've been doing this in my 10th season. That's probably the best debut Michigan offense has had since I've been doing this, for sure.
You asked Jim Harbaugh today about the value of continuity mm-hmm. and how much it meant for Michigan staff to have everybody coming back in this off season when the normal routines were so disruptive. And I do think that that's such a big thing, that Michigan's entire offensive staff was really able to dig in this off season and prepare in a way that maybe you wouldn't be able to do in a normal off season. And, you know, and we've said it for weeks now, if everything we heard about how they prepared and how focused this team was during the shutdown and how they kept working even when the season was canceled, you know, they didn't go home, they kept working, they kept showing up every day. If all of that stuff was true, we felt like that really should translate in the opening game, and it did. Michigan looked like the more prepared team. You know, they looked like the team that has been just steadily progressing, you know, during these last 8 to 10 weeks when a lot of teams have gone through a lot of different things. And, you know, Minnesota's COVID situation, we don't know exactly the specifics there, but they were shorthanded. Not an excuse. Everybody's dealing with it to some degree. You know, but Minnesota, you know, looked like a team that was missing some pieces and, you know, maybe hadn't been able to prepare the way that they wanted to. And I feel like that's going to be so much of this season, and it's really added such a, you know, a layer of unpredictability to this Big Ten season. Is it's not just, you know, the talent you've recruited, it's not just, you know, the team that you had in place at the end of last season, it's also how did you navigate this whole time? And there's a lot of variation, you know, in teams that have weathered it somewhat smoothly and teams that have really had a hard time with it. And I think we have to say it looks like Michigan came out of this about as well as you possibly could expect.
Yeah, we said it a few times on this show. I know we did, because we talked about it even back in like May and June, that the teams with the best teachers on staff were going to have an advantage. And bringing back all those coaches offensively, and considering the fact that we said, I mean, you know, you have Ed Warner on this staff. You know, I think we've both come around on, you know, we've gotten to know Josh Gattis a little bit over the last year and a half, and he is a smart, smart football coach who knows what he's doing. You know, we talked to him, and I think even during quarantine, somewhere early in spring, and he was talking about all the stuff that he was diving into when, you know, because he couldn't recruit, couldn't go out there, and so it's all this extra time. And at the end of the day, I just, in terms of the players, you know, we've seen this in the 6 years or whatever now that Harbaugh's been here. He, and really his entire coaching career, Jim Harbaugh's best work has always come when he has found a way to get his roster to share the tunnel vision with the blinders on about nothing else in your life right now matters other than football, the way that he does, you know, the way that he kind of carries himself. When he gets a roster or a team that shares that with him and doesn't get like tired of it, you know, and doesn't get like, this is a bit much, or, you know, whatever, if he can get guys to really sort of get in tune with him on that sort of, let's just all forget everything else in our lives and focus on nothing but this, then he usually does really well. I mean, that was, the first team was like that, the second team was like that, and then it started to slip. And that was the stuff that, you know, I wrote about that 2 weeks ago, or whatever it was now. 15 and 16 had a bunch of veteran guys who shared that with him. And the 17 team lost a lot of it. 18, they got some of it back. And last year, they lost even more of it, it felt like. And it feels like, for whatever reason, it's been yo-yoing a little bit here, but it felt like on Saturday that, you know what, they had it back. I mean, they were one group, and they were focused on nothing but going out there and doing exactly what they were supposed to do. They were as prepared, and we said it before the game, they were as prepared as you could possibly ask them to be given the circumstances, which is what we expected them to be, given everything they said. And, you know, they walked it. I mean, that's a rare thing in college football, to say all those things and then to have them all happen. And, you know, now we'll see if you can back it up. And obviously they've got things defensively, Austin, to work on. But at the same time, though, we said before the game, right, that we thought Minnesota was going to score some points, and they did. New faces over there, some new things happening, but I think more of the same, right? Where it was just a lot of guys waiting around for their time to get their name called, and a lot of them showed up.
Yeah, if you want to nitpick anything, you could probably talk about the run defense. Michigan gave up some yards on the ground. Aiden Hutchinson made the point today that, look, Minnesota was down. Mm-hmm. They wanted to run the ball. If a team wants to go out there and run the ball when they're behind in the second half, fine. You know, that right. Michigan wasn't going to lose sleep about having a guy run for 100 yards in a game where Minnesota was trying to play catch up. So, you know, there were some times that you could look at that and see, you know, maybe some guys in new positions. Mm-hmm. You know, that defense last year, you know, they had guys like Jordan Glasgow, Josh Metellus, Kalik Hudson, right. who had played so much football, and you know, maybe they weren't all the most dynamic, explosive athletes, but they were always in the right place. You know, fundamentally, they were really good. Maybe you saw some instances yeah. in this game where fundamentally this defense hasn't quite gotten up to that standard yet. But I think the thing that's really exciting, though, you also see maybe some top-end athleticism
right.
with this defense that maybe they didn't have last year. You know, starting with a guy like Michael Barrett, to see him coming around the edge and putting that hit on Tanner Morgan that pops the ball in the air, weren't a ton of plays like that last year. There were some, yep. you know, I mean, guys like Cam McGrone, we saw make plays at times like that last year. But that's the kind of thing I think that makes you kind of excited about the potential for this defense is the fundamentals will come. You know, we know with Don Brown, his defenses, they always tackle well. They're always fundamentally sound. So that's going to come. And the potential of guys like Michael Barrett to go out there and make those game-changing plays really, I think, opens up a lot of possibilities for that defense.
Yeah, there's a reason why this became the Michael Barrett preview podcast for a couple months there. And
come
winter.
On the show, Mike.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, it's been 2 years of sort of waiting for this, I think, for Don Brown and for everybody else in a similar way that it was with Josh Uche, where, you know, they signed him. They knew that it was going to take a minute. They knew that, you know, they had to find the right place for him to live. You know, I can remember thinking at one time that maybe they would make Michael Barrett an inside linebacker and let him run around at 4-5 the way that Devin Bush did or something like that. But they didn't. So he's a Viper. He's a hybrid. But, I mean, he's a guy that if you could get him sort of, you know, get him to retrain himself from an offensive player to a defensive player and put him in the right spot. He's one of these kind of versatile, like Kalik Hudson was that way too. I mean, he came out of high school as a guy who played quarterback, running back, receiver, whatever, everything. You know, he did all this stuff. And, you know, slowly they sort of took all those other things away and allowed him to focus. And when he finally would focus in, you could see that the reaction was there. And Barrett, I think, is the same way. It's just that, you know, Michigan gets dinged a lot for its inability, and it's fair, but its inability to recruit sometimes the really crazy game-changing athletes defensively, right? Like, and they still have answers or questions to answer in the interior, especially up front. But a guy like Michael Barrett, I think, and Josh Uche, I think really illustrate a lot of what Don Brown's sort of recruiting strategy has been, in that if he can find a guy that has a couple of things about him that are either really explosive or really unique and kind of different and has the right attitude, then and patience, I guess, to sort of ride it out, then they can find guys that they can develop and turn them into players. Like, nobody recruited Michael Barrett. That was not somebody that they were beating anyone's door down to get. You know, he was a late ad. I think some teams were recruiting him. I think Georgia Tech wanted him as an option quarterback, that kind of thing. So, you know, they've been able to find some guys like that, you know, and that's Jemmin Green. We'll see about Jemmin Green and if he can turn into something more. But I mean, he hung in there and he was a guy that nobody was really, you know, lining up to get when they got him too. So, you know, it's a both ways argument, because when you look at Michigan against Ohio State, you say, well, you know, in order to beat them, you're going to have some of those game-changing athletes, because sometimes, you know, eventually always you get to a point where you just can't teach that explosiveness. But to keep yourself, and this is what we've talked about, to keep yourself in that who's the second best team in the league conversation, mm-hmm. you need all these guys to max out. And I think Don Brown's track record in some of those areas is better than most people probably give him credit for, even though it doesn't translate against the top, you know, stuff everybody wants to see. But it shouldn't be ignored either. I mean, they've been able to sort of weave a lot of new pieces and new jobs and sort of sprinkle. I mean, we saw David Ojabo get a little bit of run. Julius Welshoff got a little bit of run. You know, these are guys that are project players that are sort of sprinkling in. And then suddenly you look up one day and you say, well, how did that guy just have 8 tackles? I mean, this has happened a bunch of times. And I feel like Barrett's kind of the latest example of it overall.
Yeah, that question of who's the second best team in the Big Ten, I feel like that question got a lot more interesting mm-hmm. after this weekend because we saw, you know, we saw Wisconsin look really impressive in their first game. Graham Mertz, you know, tremendous debut. I think he had one incompletion, but now some questions about his availability going forward. Mm-hmm. Penn State goes on the road and loses a heartbreaker to Indiana. You know, Penn State, I think, doubled up Indiana in yardage, but just some kind of weird stuff in that game. But Penn State's got questions at receiver and some questions at running back. Minnesota would have been in that conversation. I'm not sure I've got Minnesota in that conversation right now after what I saw Saturday. So really, that's where I think it stands now is, you know, I'm not going to get so out over my skis here today that I'm going to build it up like Michigan is, you know, going to go toe-to-toe with Ohio State because I'm not there yet, probably not close to that yet. But if we want to have the conversation about is Michigan now the second best team in the Big Ten, I think that's a legit conversation after what we saw Saturday.
Yeah, and really the question comes down to what do you think the ceiling is for this program as it sits right now today, given the last, you know, handful of years? And I think that the fair answer to that is the ceiling is to be the second best team in the league and to have yourself in position to load it up and get into a fight for 60 minutes and 0 seconds against Ohio State in the last game and see what happens. Like that. And some people who want to say that, no, the ceiling should be, you know, that they are out recruiting Ohio State and beating Ohio State 62-39 on their way to an undefeated season. I got to tell you, we've never seen that before. So I don't know where that would come from is something that you could base an expectation on. That's not realistic today. Maybe, you know, maybe you could argue Michigan's paying Jim Harbaugh enough money to where that should be realistic. But it's in today's what we're sitting here right now talking about. It's not. What is realistic, though, is what, you know, you just said, Austin, is getting yourself in position to where you're scoring wins against teams like Minnesota. You're beating someone like Wisconsin and Penn State. And, you know, Michigan State has fallen off here. But, you know, if they get themselves back around, they would be in that conversation as well. You know, maybe Indiana's in that conversation. Taking care of your business on your way to the last game and giving yourself a chance and then figuring it out when it happens. That's it. That's got to be the whole thing here. And that's got to be the expectation and the kind of the ceiling of where you're looking at this whole thing to be. And the only way they're going to get to the next level of that would be to go about it that exact same plan and then find a way on that last game to, you know, solve an incredible riddle and maybe get a bounce or two your way. But otherwise, you know, you look around and I didn't see anybody other than Ohio State that I would point to in the Big Ten and say, well, Michigan's not going to be able to beat them. I mean, that's Milton being so comfortable and so calm and, you know, in charge there. And obviously, you know, like we said at the top, COVID changes everything and who knows how this is going to go. But if it continues to build from its starting point and doesn't take any steps backward, then, I mean, they look, their forecast looks a lot better and a lot more clear than it did, you know, a week ago at this time.
Yeah, a week ago we were talking about our, you know, our preseason predictions. We were both at 5-3. We were talking about these four swing games on the schedule that looked on paper to be toss-ups pretty much. Well, you know, this game was not a toss-up. No. Michigan was clearly the better team, which I didn't expect. I thought I looked at it, I thought it was going to be a pretty evenly matched game, and it wasn't. Michigan, top to bottom, was better than Minnesota. So now you go into week two, Michigan State. You talk about the plight of the Spartans after that pretty inauspicious beginning to the Mel Tucker era there. But it's interesting spot now for Michigan going forward because they're feeling really good. Michigan State can't be feeling very good at all, but it is, you know, it is just 1 week in a season that we know is going to be pretty unpredictable.
Yeah, and that's the thing now is you've got to be able to if you're Michigan, and maybe it'll help that, you know, they're not going to be able to go out and do all kinds of things that you'd normally get to do in a normal year and get all the pats on the back that you'd normally get in person. Maybe you'll get some pats on the back virtually, right, or whatever, but you know, you've got to be able to keep yourself grounded and remember what got you to that level of execution on Saturday night. Because, you know, all those things that we just talked about how great they were, can look as frustrating as the stuff we saw early last year when you're not executing. So, you know, Michigan State's a team that is still trying to figure out, you know, how to get lined up right, is still trying to figure out how to get everybody who, I mean, they're still trying to figure out who their best 11 are on both sides of the ball firmly. I mean, I was at that game Saturday with Colton, and I know you guys will probably talk about it later in the week, but like, you know, that Michigan State right now as a program, or as a team, I guess, even in this year, is kind of like, you know, I think in the middle of the game, I said something like, it feels like they're in like the second week of spring ball, like what normally would be a, you know, spring practice. There was a couple, there'd be a moment or two where you'd be like, oh, that looks pretty good. That guy looks like he knows what he's doing. And then 2 seconds later, you'd be like, well, that was a disaster. And then it would be, you know, perfect storm, everything else. So with their staff and everything else, the way that they've, you know, all the stuff they've kind of had to deal with. And again, I think you can point to the summer, like you said earlier, Austin, that 10 weeks of just Michigan, they were practicing that day that the season was canceled, right? August 11th.
Mm-hmm.
When I went up to the parking lot to see what was going to happen, and they all stayed out there and kept practicing. And people were like, what are they doing? Like, what is this? And Michigan State, you know, and I understood why Michigan State did this, but they went back to the weight room. They stopped practicing because I think at the time everyone was like, we're not going to have a season. This is going to be, you know, maybe in the spring. So I think Mel Tucker was like, look, we haven't had any time with these guys. They haven't had any time with their weight staff. They can now get them back in there. So they sort of stopped practicing and Michigan kept practicing. And for Michigan right now, it's paying off. And for the teams that, you know, didn't really know what to do maybe in that scenario, or maybe outside, you know, circumstances dictated otherwise, it's going to be an uphill climb. Michigan's not, they're not chasing from behind right now. Like last year when the year started, it just, it felt like, especially offensively, a team that was playing constant catch up, like a team that just didn't, for any number of reasons, they weren't able to use the offseason and maximize it. You know what I mean? Like it just didn't seem like they got all of the efficiency that you would have wanted from either fall camp or spring ball or the summer or all three combined. And they were able to get that from this weird thing where everybody had to figure it out. I don't know. I mean, Harbaugh's a weird guy. Maybe this helps out Harbaugh more than it hurts others. I have no idea, but that's what it felt like on Saturday. Just a very, very prepared team. A team that was ready to roll in a really uncertain situation, and Minnesota just, you know, frankly wasn't.
Yeah, we'll get into the Michigan State matchup more as the week goes on, but I think the parting thought from me for today, and I mentioned this to you earlier, it just, everything around Michigan's program feels different this year. You know, it just feels lighter. It feels looser. You know, we were talking to Jim Harbaugh on the Zoom call, and you know, he was telling stories, you know, about the pregame scene in the locker room, and we get done, and you know, he's not even finished. He has more he wants to say. Like, I was thinking, well, boy, that didn't happen very often last year. I mean, last year, it felt like any time we were in there, you know, there was just this kind of tension in the air, and this, you know, kind of this pressure hanging over the program. And I, you know, I don't know where that came from. Obviously, there was a lot of expectations for this team last year. You know, Shea Patterson, it was his last season. You know, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Tariq Black, you know, these guys who had, you know, come in with such expectations that hadn't really been fulfilled. And it just felt like that was hanging over the whole season, no matter what they did. You know, it didn't. A lot of times I came away from stuff thinking like, are these guys having fun? Is this fun for them? Are they enjoying this? Or is this just like torture for them? And I have to say, and it, you know, it's different because we haven't been doing any of this stuff in person. So you don't get the same feel that you do when you're standing face to face with somebody in a room. But I have to say, just from the Zoom stuff we've done, it feels like guys are having fun this year. You know, it feels a lot looser. And, you know, Jim Harbaugh made a comment last week or the week before about how much he liked the chemistry of the team, the togetherness of the team. And sometimes that's just, you know, sometimes that's just coach speak. You don't typically hear a coach come out and say, our chemistry sucks, it's terrible. But I do wonder if maybe that was rooted in something true, that this team, you know, just the attitude of this team has allowed everybody to just kind of take a deep breath, go about their business. It just feels like kind of a, you know, some pressure has been lifted off the program. They're playing free and easy.
Yeah, I think that you nailed it right there. That's the best way to put it is, you know, in my experience, and I'm sure in yours as well, we've been doing this a long time, the best college teams are the ones that have a bunch of guys who can, you know, block out everything else and then load it up and just let it go when a game comes, right? The teams that can just load it up, let it rip, and see what happens. And it's not, you know, oh God, if I take one wrong step on this thing, the whole thing's going to crumble or whatever. Right. I mean, that was what last year felt like. It felt like a team that was trying to convince itself that it knew what it was doing when in reality it didn't. And this is a team that has blocked out all that other stuff, you know, basically because they have no other choice. And they've loaded it up and let it go. I mean, Harbaugh said it after the game. All he told them to do was, I want you to let it rip. I want you to just let it all go and let's see what happens. And it felt like a lot of guys having a lot of fun. I think that that's probably the best way you can really frame it. It was just not a lot of worrying, not a lot of panicking. And, you know, I always tie it back to Milton. I think that, you know, the quarterback in those scenarios, when you have a guy who is not faking being calm, right? Like who's genuinely calm. But we talked to him after the game and it was like we were talking to him after, you know, a random Tuesday. It was just the same. He's the same. And when you have a guy who is genuinely like that, and they are rare, it's not something that is what I would say that we see every day. It changes a lot. It changes a lot about everyone's confidence. And I just, there was a vibe around Joe Milton for a couple years here, building into this year, that, you know, maybe this was going to be something that they could make it work. And it, if he was able to sort of live up to his end of the bargain and execute, then it was going to be better for everyone around, you know, everyone. And, you know, that was the belief inside the program in January when the calendar turned. I don't know if I would say it was a certainty. I don't think they knew that for sure. But, you know, you talk to the right people in a quiet moment and they would have told you, you know, if Joe Milton can turn a corner here and continue to progress and show us that he can execute, then we can build an offense that's going to be different. And, but, you know, he's got to go do it. And I think that was the important thing. And, you know, so far, I don't know how you nitpick it. I mean, he looked great. And, you know, Michigan suddenly looks like a team that has a lot to offer as we go through this very unique and weird and who knows what will happen next season.
All right, folks, thanks for checking out The Beat. If you were a listener to the RPM podcast, glad you made your way over here and found us at The Beat. We will have another show at some point later in the week. I'm sure we'll bring Colton Pouncey in the mix and talk a little bit more about Michigan State. I will also be on The Big Football Show with Colton on Thursday to dig more into all the teams around the Big Ten, so you can check that out as well. That show is 5 days a week with a rotating cast of writers from the Athletic, so if you're a Big Ten football fan, check that out. Yeah, Michigan fans, ride the train, enjoy it, ride the wave as long as it lasts, and we will be here whatever happens to break it down. So thanks for checking out the show.
Happy farewell to the county, the place where I